You are listening to Galaxy Billies, written and read by Michael Plested. Episode 0.
In a lonely corner of a spiral arm galaxy, a sad scene is taking place. A single silver starship sits motionless in the blackness. As we watch, a door opens and six bodies are jettisoned. They float away from the ship like some frozen flock of birds. Who were they? Why are they dead? Did they have lunch? So many unanswered questions. And what of the ship? As the bodies begin to orbit the vessel, it remains dead as its former crew to the casual eye. If we were able to know what it was thinking, what would we learn? In actuality, the thoughts of the ship were not unlike those of a schizophrenic patient. The kind you might find in any of the outstanding mental institutions found wherever intelligence gathers.
Who am I? Why am I here? Do I like the color blue?
These questions and many more flash through its circuitry. The explanation for this breakdown of thought can be traced back to the ship's creators. Beings of infinite wisdom and intelligence, the designers wanted to build a vessel that would be wholly unique in the universe. They wanted it to be self-sustaining, naturally, but not so aware that it could come back to them with a grievance. It was decided, after much debate, that the ship could be sentient, but only if it first had a crew of sentient beings inhabiting it. This would solve the issue of self-awareness, and it would remove the likelihood of any nasty legal actions. And so it was built and sent out from the planet of its creation with a holy mission to perform. It was programmed to find an intelligent crew whenever needed, and for many centuries, it performed flawlessly. Somewhere along the way, however, the details of the holy mission were lost, as was the identity and location of the designers. This did not impede the ship in any way, however. It continued to gather crews of intelligent, if gullible, beings and traveled the stars collecting information that it neither understood nor used. Which brings us back to the current situation. The six frozen corpses were only the latest volunteers. They were members of the fun-loving species known as Sodophians, from, oddly enough, the planet Sodophia. Sodophians have often been compared to Earth dolphins by those in the know. Dolphins, of course, are universally known as the clowns of the marine world. Sodophians, much the same, are clowns of the xenophobe set. This is where the big difference can be seen. A dolphin will perform backflips to the enjoyment of its audience. Sodophians, on the other hand, perform similar feats of agility, but while shooting down members of the audience. A small difference to be sure, but an important one. It is therefore a very good thing that Sodophians are not prone to leaving Sodophia, which is a paradise by any standards. Food can be found in abundance, the weather is warm and inviting, and the most dangerous fauna on the planet can be dealt with using a rolled-up newspaper. Most beings use the word idyllic to describe the planet, and lucky bastards to describe the Sodophians. So what could the ship possibly offer to persuade six young Sodophians to sign up as crew? The answer to that lies in the age-old problem young people everywhere seem to face. Do they stay put in their hometown where watching paint dry is a sport? Or do they strike out into the bigger world to make their fortunes? In this case, they obviously chose to strike out on the ship in search of fun and adventure. Just as obvious is the fact that they failed to find it in a very terminal way. This turns out to have been a very good thing in the eyes of the universe. Unchecked, who knows what kind of chaos these fun-loving but xenophobic crazy kids could have caused. Their deaths did leave the ship in something of a pickle, however. Without an intelligent crew inhabiting it, the ship quickly lost the ability to think for itself. The quirks of its failed crew's personalities ensured that it would refuse to accept any local intelligences as new crew. And so it sat, its mind fading. It remained that way until it functioned by means of automatic systems only. These systems were programmed to take over in the eventuality of just such a situation. The automatic scan for life, any life within its range. Eventually, one long-range scanner detected the faintest traces of intelligent life. Pre-programmed responses took over, and the ship's engines fired. It accelerated away from the sad remains of its former crew and was gone. And what of the former crew? They were destined to be pulled into the gravity well of a small, rocky planet where their surviving DNA provided the seeds of life. That life went on to evolve into the galaxy's premier mime artists, which just goes to show the universe has a sense of humor too. As for the ship, it has followed the traces of life to a solar system comprised of a single yellow star orbited by several planets. Now let's watch as the ship approaches the third planet from the star. It is a pretty little blue planet, largely covered by water, circled by a single airless moon. It is this world that will provide the next crew members for the ship. It orbits the planet and prepares. As we watch, it begins to descend on the night side of this small, unsuspecting world. Betty Sue stood over the wash basin and stared out the window of her shack. She looked out at the ramshackle buildings and the grove of pine and spruce that made up her yard and let out a contented sigh. She had always wanted a place to call her own. Sure, she had been in charge of her father's household after Ma had died, but it wasn't the same. It hadn't been hers. She sometimes wondered if she'd made the right decision marrying Zeke to get all this. Zeke wasn't what you would call a simple man. Simple implied a certain level of intelligence that he'd managed to erase long ago by the constant application of moonshine. She shook her head, blonde braids rattling around her freckled face. It had been a sacrifice, sure, but only a small one. Zeke was a good provider, even if he was a simple one. Give him a rifle and tell him what you wanted for supper, and by thunder, he would get it. Possum, squirrel, rabbit, it didn't matter. She asked, and he got it. Sometimes it took a few days, but he always got her what she wanted. The screen door in the back of the shack squeaked open. Betty Sue didn't bother turning around. Probably one of the hounds. When she felt the hands on her waist, she knew she'd been wrong. She fired back her elbow, catching her visitor by surprise. "Oof," the man said, doubling over. She turned and looked at him.
"Jim Bob, what are you doing here? I told you not to come around here no more. If Zeke catches you with me, he'll skin you alive."
Her cousin smiled up at her. He was a handsome SOB, she admitted to herself. He looked simply adorable in that coverall and bare feet. Problem was, he knew it, too. Jim Bob stood and reached for her. She slapped his hand away just before it touched her halter top.
Jim Bob, ain't you listening to me? I'm a married woman now. We can't be together no more.
Aw, come on, Betty Sue. Once more for old time's sake?
No, Jim Bob. We can't be together ever again. You know that.
She heard the sound of broken whistling.
That's Zeke. Time for you to go.
Jim Bob looked at her with mournful brown eyes.
Aw, gee, Betty Sue. Do I gotta go? I only just got here.
Betty Sue's smile was rueful.
Yes, you big lug.
She pulled his roving hands off her waist and gave him a gentle shove towards the back door.
Zeke is coming up the drive. You know you don't want him catching you here.
Jim Bob looked around Betty Sue as if to see through the door.
You don't love him. Why don't you come with me and leave the idiot alone?
Betty Sue sighed again and gave Jim Bob a harder shove.
I've made my choice, and you've got to live with that. Now get.
The sound of whistling grew louder. The whistler tried to hit a high note and missed rather spectacularly.
Get out now, Jim Bob, or you won't be alive long enough to come see me again.
She gave him a last shove out the door. Jim Bob stumbled off the back porch and lurched his way into the woods. The door of the house banged open.
Betty Sue, I'm home.
The man in question had a big lopsided grin on his face, a dripping bloody mess of squirrels in his right hand, and a vacant look in his eyes. He gently set down his gun and proudly presented the squirrels to her.
I brung dinner.
Betty Sue looked at her floor and sighed again.
Zeke, you're supposed to clean them there squirrels outside the house. Look at the mess you're making on my floor.
Zeke looked down, and his eager expression faded.
Gee, Betty Sue, I'm sorry.
Another droplet of blood splattered on the formerly clean floor.
Well, get out of here with them, then.
Betty Sue took several steps forward and gave him a push.
Clean them critters out by the shed and then bring them in.
She leaned out the door.
And make sure you get all the buckshot out of them this time.
Zeke turned and shuffled out the door in the direction of the shed. Betty Sue grabbed a handy bucket and went out to the pump for some water. She shook her head to herself. Men, they were always in the way, making a mess, or putting their hands where they didn't belong. She pumped the pail full of water and walked back to the house. As she knelt on the floor, scrubbing yet another bloodstain out of the wood, her thoughts drifted back to Jim Bob. He sure did look fine in that coverall, and he could string more than two words together at a time. Betty Sue sighed again.
Well, it's too late now.
It was dark when Zeke clomped back into the cabin with the clean squirrels. His boots left big clumps of mud on the newly scrubbed floor.
Hi, Betty Sue,
he slurred. He came closer to give her a slobbery kiss. Betty Sue turned her face just as he kissed her.
You smell like a still, Zeke. You been at the shine again?
Zeke grinned.
Sure have. Been out hunting for the past day, and I was powerful thirsty.
Well, stay back from me, you big oaf. Your breath is curling my nose hairs.
Zeke hung his head.
Ain't you glad to see me? I've done been gone for a couple days. Don't you get lonesome for me?
Betty Sue looked up towards the heavens for a moment before she straightened the apron on her dress. She turned to face Zeke.
Why, of course I missed you.
Her voice dripped honey.
But a woman likes to have her man sober once in a while.
Tried that once,
Zeke said in a low rumble.
Made my head hurt.
He grabbed Betty Sue and pulled her to him.
I missed you.
He was about to kiss her when the darkness outside the window was replaced by a blazing white light. The dishes in the cupboards and on the counter began to rattle. Even Zeke noticed.
Huh? What's going on?
A low rumbling began, and the light continued to grow brighter. Betty Sue gave Zeke a shove, only to float away from him. Everything in the kitchen, not fastened down, began to lift up into the air. Cups and plates careened off walls. The salt shaker floated past, leaking small white granules like a comet's tail. Zeke looked down at his feet as he began to slowly rotate. Betty Sue screamed as the sound grew louder and light got brighter. Zeke bellowed like an angry bull and floundered around the room, trying to swim through the air to the door, paddling and kicking his feet like a running badger. The sound grew louder and louder, threatening to burst their eardrums. Betty Sue clapped her hands over her ears. She could see Zeke howling, but the cacophony drowned him out. His eyes were squeezed shut in pain. As she watched, he jerked one final time and went still, floating like a giant sleeping baby near the door. She clutched fingers into fists, feeling the nails cut into her palms. The rumbling was overpowering now, and she squeezed her eyes tightly closed, her fist pressed against her ears. With a scream, she arched her back and went limp, hanging in the air like a doll hung over a line. Betty Sue lay on her back, eyes closed. She tried to move, but she just couldn't. She willed her eyes to open, but they wouldn't work either. There was something very odd going on here. Judging from the low hum around her, the chill of the floor, the smell of metal, and 100 other little things her mind couldn't identify, she knew she wasn't in her cabin anymore. A curious 3-note tone sounded, and an echoing voice spoke.
Scanning subjects for sentience quotient to begin in 5 ticks.
Sentience quotient? 5 ticks? The words sounded both familiar and strange at the same time. Betty Sue strained to open her eyes. It was like trying to unscrew the lid from an old rusted jar full of pickles. She strained and thought she was almost there, but her eyes simply refused to open. The echoing voice spoke again.
Sentience quotient scan in 4 ticks.
Betty Sue tried to open her mouth to shout at the voice to shut up, but it did not respond any better than her eyes did.
Sentience quotient scan in 3 ticks.
It wasn't that the words were actually doing her any harm, she reasoned with herself. It was just that the voice was so damned annoying. It sounded so unnatural, and yet so snotty at the same time. Betty Sue vowed if she ever met the guy who talked like that, she would give him a swift kick in the chestnuts.
Sentience quotient scan in 2 ticks.
She continued to wrestle with her inert body, cursing it for being so unresponsive, cursing the voice for being so irritating, and mostly wondering just where the hell she was. Nothing changed. The floor remained cold, and her body stayed stiff as a board.
Sentience quotient scan commencing in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, begin.
A hum began, and a light so bright she could see it through her eyelids flashed into life. A feeling like someone scraping the innards out of a pumpkin assaulted her brain. It hurt so badly, she couldn't think, couldn't breathe. She screamed. 4 other voices joined hers. The pain lasted only a moment, but it was enough to pull her body out of its rigor mortis. She felt an arm flop across her chest, and she opened her eyes. Her eyes took a few moments to focus, and she saw Zeke lying beside her. His head lay in what she supposed was a giant pool of drool. He looked even more slack-jawed than usual. The room grabbed her attention next, as her eyes focused even more. Every wall was white, pristine white like the snow that fell in the winter time. She'd always wanted her shack to be that color, but she had never been able to manage it for whatever reason. Things in the mountains just never stayed quite that clean. Besides white on the walls, there was nothing. No doors, no windows, nothing.
Sentience quotient scan complete,
the annoying voice cut in.
Scan results indicate subjects possess minimal sentience requirements to allow ship to function with full faculties.
Her eyes drifted along the white expanse, and she tried to make out what was ceiling, what was wall, and what was floor. Laying in a sort of heap across the room were several other people, all naked. One was obviously a young boy she had only seen once or twice. A girl she knew, named Carol Ann, lay straight beside him looking incredibly groggy. And the third, her breath caught in her chest. The third was Jim Bob, that handsome man. Oh, Lord, what would happen when Zeke and Jim Bob met? Then she remembered. Zeke didn't know about Jim Bob. She meant to keep it that way. Just then, the annoying voice cut in on her reverie.
Hello, Earthlings, and welcome aboard the ship. It is an honor to have you here.
Who are you calling Earthling?
Betty Sue noticed she wasn't wearing any clothing either and tried to cover up. Zeke sat up, took one look at Betty Sue, and began to grin. She hit him in the shoulder.
Quit it, you big lug.
She looked around.
Hey there, whoever you are, where are my clothes?
The voice spoke again.
Unfortunately, your clothing was contaminated and had to be destroyed.
Contamin-what?
Betty Sue tried to identify the source of the voice while covering herself with hands and arms and failing miserably.
Contaminated. Please wait one moment while I fabricate something appropriate for you to wear.
She heard a whirring sound, and moments later, a rod protruded out of the wall, a gray garment hanging on it. Betty Sue stood up, trying hard to keep Zeke's hands away from her body. She scrambled on unsteady feet over to the gray garment. The cloth was soft and flowed through her fingers like water. She quickly pulled the form-fitting clothing on over her nakedness.
Thing fits a little tight,
she said as she twisted and stretched to test the fit.
It don't leave nothing to the imagination, do it? What do you call this thing? It sure ain't no dress.
I call it a ship suit,
the voice responded. As it spoke, four more appeared out of the walls. One more gray, two black, and a smaller brown one.
Please, everyone, put one on. I understand that your culture has some morality issues about nudity.
I don't got no problem with it,
Zeke said, admiring the way the gray ship suit hugged Betty Sue's curves. Betty Sue grabbed the nearest black garment and thrust it at Zeke.
Just put it on, you big oaf.
She looked around the room, watching Jim Bob out of the corner of her eye. Yep. He was fine to look at, even in these weird clothes. While the others were pulling their ship suits on, Betty Sue picked a wall to focus on.
Hey, you!
Yes, how can I help you?
The voice sounded friendly, almost helpful.
You can start by telling me where the heck we are.
I already did that when I welcomed you on board,
the voice said, slightly offended.
And where is that exactly? Humor me, mister, 'cause I know this isn't where I was a little while ago.
The voice tried to sound patient, almost like it was talking to a small child.
You are on board the ship Grockmark.
And just what in tarnation is this ship?
Betty Sue demanded.
This here room ain't like nothing I've ever seen before.
The Grockmark is a starship,
the voice said proudly.
You are on board the starship Grockmark,
it added to emphasize the point.
Well, I don't want to be on no starship,
Betty Sue said. By the shuffling sounds, she knew that the rest of the folk were crowding behind her.
I'm very sorry about that,
the voice began, not really sounding very sorry at all.
But you are necessary to my mission. I must have sentient beings on board to perform my function.
There you go saying that word again, sentient. What the heck does that mean exactly?
You do not know what sentient means? Just a moment.
A sound like a fast-forwarding cassette tape flashed through their hearing. The voice that came back sounded puzzled.
I have rechecked your vocabulary, and I am certain that I have used the right word. Are you sure you do not know what sentient means?
Just stop talking so highfalutin and tell me what it means.
Betty Sue stamped her foot.
Right now.
The voice sighed.
Sentient means you think and are aware. Do you understand now?
Well, why didn't you say that in the first place? Jehoshaphat.
Betty Sue stamped her foot again.
I did say that,
the voice said, sounding slightly offended.
It is not my fault you do not understand simple English.
Hey, just who the heck are you anyway?
This came from the girl, Carol Ann. She walked up beside Betty Sue as she spoke.
Who am I?
The question seemed to startle the speaker.
I am the Grockmark. I am the ship.
Get out of here,
Betty Sue said.
How stupid do you think we are?
I know exactly how stupid each of you are, miss,
Grockmar said.
That was the purpose of the scan. Would you like to know the results?
For once, Betty Sue was speechless. She pounded on the wall of the ship.
None of your sassin, you hear? I want some answers, plain and simple.
Very well,
the Grockmar replied.
Where shall I begin?
You can begin by telling us how in tarnation we got here in the first place,
Betty Sue demanded.
I brought you here,
the ship said simply.
I needed members of an intelligent species to be my crew. You were the first denizens my scanners detected when I dropped down from your upper atmosphere. I chose the first 5 among you who were physically fit and young enough to come with me.
You kidnapped us?
Betty Sue asked, amazement coloring her voice. Jim Bob stepped forward and spoke to the wall.
Did you call us intelligent?
The ship had paused at Betty Sue's question.
I suppose in your vocabulary, I did kidnap you. And yes, I did call you intelligent.
Jim Bob let out a whooping laugh.
I thought so.
He started dancing and hollering. He pointed at Zeke.
You sure made a mistake with that one, though. That there fella is dumber than a sock full of rocks.
Sock full of rocks? I do not understand the reference.
It means Zeke is stupid,
Carol Ann said.
I disagree,
the ship replied.
While it is true that his mind is damaged, Zeke may be the most intelligent of you all.
Jim Bob laughed at this. Betty Sue slapped the wall of the ship.
I don't care about any of that. I've got to get home. I left stew cooking on the stove.
You need not worry about any stew cooking,
Rockmar said.
When I took you, I destroyed the buildings you were in to cover your disappearance. There is nothing left to go home to.
You destroyed my home?
Betty Sue sat down hard on the floor.
Yes. As I said before, I need you to be my crew. I cannot return you as you are necessary to my mission.
A picture appeared in the wall. A blue planet surrounded by the blackness of space was receding by the second.
Here, I will show you your planet so you can bid it farewell.
The humans watched as their planet grew smaller and eventually disappeared.
You have been listening to Galaxy Billies, Episode 0. Sound effects for Galaxy Billies provided by the Free Sound Project. The Free Sound Project can be found at www.freesound.org. Galaxy Billies is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.5 Canada license. To learn more about this podcast, please go to www.irreverentmuse.com. Thank you for listening.
Production.